hostages held in Gaza. Hamas said it had no connection to the shooting in Rafah and that Israel is intentionally obstructing efforts to search for bodies in the Strip. Also, that Israel is, quote, seeking to fabricate false pretexts in preparation for taking new aggressive steps against our people, close quote. The United Nations human rights chief said today that he is appalled at reports of the attacks and that, quote, the laws of war are very clear on the paramount importance of protecting civilians and civilian infrastructure, close quote. In related news, the New York Times reports today that hundreds of trucks transporting aid are now entering Gaza daily, some with aid from international organizations, others with donations from foreign governments. But relief workers say much of what is going through appears to be commercial goods bound for markets. A number of residents told the New York Times they are seeing a wider range of goods in local markets. Quote, but some of what is available in markets is not highly nutritious, and much of it is unaffordable. For WPFW News in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin.
WPFW comes in part from Friends of the Congo, a 501c3 entity who will be hosting Love Sound, an evening of soul sisters in support of WPFW and the Friends of the Congo's DRC Women, Peace, and Security Center in Kinshasa. This event will take place on Sunday, November 2nd, from 5 to 8 p.m. at Westminster Presbyterian Church at 400 I Street Southwest. Performers include Free Benjamin, Wena, Anna Mualago, Ayana Gregory, and more. More information on this event is available at WPFWFM.org.
Good afternoon. This is the Shai Rana Show with your host, Zain Al-Amin. This is a show that focuses on Arab culture and politics, and it airs every Wednesday for 1 hour at WPFWFM.org and WBAI-FM. Good afternoon, everybody. This is Zain Al-Amin with the Shai Nana Show. Today's show will be all about Sudan and also the interconnectedness, of course. For those of you who are not aware, Sudan is part of the Arab world and is, of course, we have to keep attention on what's happening on Sudan. The miseries that it's been going through, the massacres that it's been going through, that are just on par with what's happening, almost on par with what's happening in Gaza and the interconnectedness with Gaza and Congo, etc. I'm happy to say that we have Saad Abdelaziz as our guest today, and she's a Sudanese American human rights lawyer and founder of the advocacy organization Decolonize Sudan. And in this organization, she documents abuses and files human rights complaints on behalf of victims, creates educational materials, and leads advocacy trainings throughout the U.S. And recently, I believe, and Saad can correct me, one of the most recent things, you could see it on Middle East Monitor, one of their latest campaigns and petitions has to do with the fact that there is a U.S.-based rights, that there is an investigation into the presence of the RSF leader. This is the group of armed men supported by the UAE, that has been massacring and raping and robbing Sudanese men and women across the country, and that there's actually the fact that we have an RSF leader here in the U.S. is a golden opportunity to basically confront this travesty that's happening, that's been being funded by one of the closest allies to the U.S. and Israel, the United Arab Emirates. Welcome, Saad.
Peace and greetings, Zain, and greetings to your audience. Thank you so much for having me and hosting us and platforming our work at this vital time when there are the most atrocious massacres by the RSF militia occurring on the ground now.
Thank you for taking time, Saad, at this tumultuous time. Things just keep increasing, and with people too distracted by the horror that's happening around the world, and even the attacks on democracy and people here in the United States, to take a look at one of the greatest humanitarian crises ongoing right now, which is in Sudan. And I would like to start with, if you can give the audience that doesn't, I want to start back just to give some historical context, start with the uprising that happened a few years ago, and then talk about how the counter-revolution happened from there.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, I will contextualize what's currently happening. There is a genocidal RSF, there's a genocidal militia called the RSF. It is conducting an annihilation campaign of the people of Darfur in Sudan, and it's doing so in order to seek control of the land and of the resources and completely destabilize Sudan. This would not be possible without their funders and their arms provider, the United Arab Emirates. So this is very vital to contextualize what's currently happening. In order to understand this, in 2019, the people of Sudan took to the streets to revolt against the then the dictator that was at power at that point, which was Omar al-Bashir, his regime, and to revolt against the corruption and mismanagement under his regime. Omar al-Bashir was ousted and under a military coup, and what followed was a period of a power vacuum in which the RSF militia jumped in to take control and power. They did this through coordination with the United Arab Emirates, and they coordinated along with Israeli officials leading up to their siege of much of Sudan in April of 2023. This was a brutal siege in which over 60,000 people were killed in Khartoum. Khartoum was invaded for the first time in Sudan's history. And at this point, was when most of the infrastructure of Sudan was destroyed by this militia. Massacres happened en masse throughout the country, throughout the Al Jazeera regions and Al Jazeera and Khartoum regions, and much of the population, one third of the population, over 16 million people were forcibly displaced, both internally and externally, and from 2023 onward, the Sudanese people, from April 2023 onward, the Sudanese people have had to live through this terror, through this genocide at the hands of the UAE-backed RSF militia. As of 1 year ago, the RSF shifted its strategy into annexing the west of Sudan, the resource-rich west of Sudan, and it laid out its plan over a year ago that it said, we will annihilate the people of the West in order to take control of this land. They laid out their plan, and Sudanese people had been warning and screaming since then about what will happen if this militia is allowed to operate with impunity to enforce this plan that they laid out. UN officials warned back in June what would happen to the people of Al-Fashir, to the people in Darfur, if this militia were to conduct its operation of ethnic cleansing and genocide in order to take control of the land. Now, within the past 72 hours, we are seeing one of the most barbaric campaigns of annihilation take place in El Fashir, Sudan, and it feels too late to stop it. But the Sudanese people persist. We will break the siege on El Fashir, and we call on a UAE arms embargo now. The issue that's happening that we're facing here in DC is that the U.S. is very much complicit in the genocide in Sudan, and it is complicit by providing not only arms to the UAE, it is the main arms manufacturer of UAE weapons and has only increased its exports of arms to the UAE since the RSF siege began in 2023. So there are many organizations, including the Council of American Islamic Relations, that have put together a petition for a UAE arms embargo and are actively advocating for a UAE arms embargo now that would stop the flow of U.S. weapons to the UAE contingent upon its support of this genocidal militia. Our tax dollars here in the U.S. are going to those arms to kill our people in Sudan, to mercilessly brutalize and kill our people in order to take control of the land and the resources. So many U.S. representatives, including Representative Sarah Jacobs, have put together proposed legislation on a UAE arms embargo bill. What this would look like, it is in place, and so we're asking for support around this bill. And the U.S. is also complicit in providing diplomatic legitimacy to this barbaric mercenary militia force, the RSF, in the midst of their genocide of the people, Sudanese people, in El Fashir. The U.S. is hosting the RSF leader, Algoni Dagalo, currently in D.C., and he is staying at the Waldorf Astoria, where Sudanese women and people are gathered to oppose this genocidal militia leader, this war criminal being hosted here in D.C. This is despite the U.S. imposing targeted sanctions under the Global Magnitsky Act. He is currently being hosted in D.C. Our organization, Decolonize Sudan, is calling on the Department of Treasury, the Department of Justice, and the State Department to enforce their existing sanctions on Algoni Dagalo and release to the public information on circumstances of his entry. Why was this sanctioned war criminal invited into the U.S. to D.C. at this time, in the midst of his militia completing a barbaric campaign of annihilation against our people? So we're asking. We're not only asking. We're demanding this. We filed a petition on the 26th to demand that the DOJ and the Department of Treasury, OFAC, immediately release this information and enforce their existing sanctions regime.
Just to repeat the name of the RSF, did you say general? He's a general in RSF.
So Algoni Dagalo, he is the main procurement director for the RSF. The RSF itself is a transnational corporation, and he is the owner of all of the corporation of the RSF, as well as all of the subsidiaries of the RSF. He is also the brother of the founder and leader of the RSF, Mohammed Hamdan Dagalo.
Mohammed Hamdan Dagalo. That's the name I've heard before. In terms of today's protest, is there a specific time that the Decolonized Sudan is calling for people to gather, or in general they're already there? They've been there all day.
We've been outside of the Waldorf Astoria for 72 hours now, and are here to challenge and call out Algoni Dagalo, staying at this hotel, being invited into this luxurious hotel, invited into D.C., especially at this time.
And do you know who put out the invitation, Saad?
So there is only one way that a sanctioned individual, especially under SDN sanctions, targeted sanctions, is allowed entry in, and that is through State Department visa. So he was issued the only way in which this sanctioned individual was able to enter is through the State Department issuing a special visa for him to come in, logical assessment of that is that he was brought in for the recent U.S.-led peace talks, so-called peace talks, which invited in the United Arab Emirates and the RSF head, the very people that are conducting this genocide on our people to decide the fate of Sudan. So Sudanese people en masse oppose so-called peace talks with this genocidal militia. This is not a political entity to be bargained with, and they have shown that within the past 72 hours. They have barbarically massacred and are annihilating the campaign, the population of Al-Fashir. They are conducting unspeakable horrors, sexual violence, lynching of men, women, children, lynching of entire families. The trenches that they dug up in order to keep the people of Al-Fashir imprisoned in and keep food from coming in, those trenches are now acting as mass grave sites. They are burying the mass and burning these bodies in these trenches now. Just yesterday, last night, a couple of hours ago, the RSF conducted a massacre on the Saudi hospital in Al-Fashir. They massacred all of the patients in the hospital, which confirms the Yale Humanitarian Research Lab's recent emergency reports on the Saudi maternity hospital massacre. This is not a political entity to be bargained with. This is a brutal, barbaric, mercenary force that could not operate without the United Arab Emirates. And that's why the Council for American Islamic Relations CARE, House Representative Sarah Jacobs and others are calling on a arms embargo on the UAE now. We need to cut the flow of arms that makes this genocide possible. Without the UAE, the RSF would not be able to operate, would not be able to conduct this genocide. And the US has been enabling it through its defense partner, its main defense partner, the United Arab Emirates. The US could end this in a day. They could end this with a call. And that's the simple ask that Sudanese people are making, are demanding that the country here seeks to stand for humanitarianism, for human rights, and appear as some kind of neutral mediator for peace in Sudan. If it truly wants peace, end the weapons flow from the United Arab Emirates now. That's what we're demanding. Mm-hmm.
And it's incredible what a mess the United Arab Emirates is making of the whole region. I mean, they've already interfered in Libya. They've interfered against Palestine. They've interfered against Yemen, Lebanon, and Sudan. I mean, the United Arab Emirates is a wrecking ball right now. For those of you who are listening, there are the people, basically these are two proxies, the United Arab Emirates and Israel, are proxies of the United States that's supplying them with weapons that are wreaking havoc in the world. These are the most moral, the most depraved people in the world, the Israelis and the Emiratis. And the unique thing about the United Arab Emirates is that even in in other Gulf countries, you will find that there's resistance among the population, not open resistance, but a disagreement with the government. But in the case of the United Arab Emirates, being so small in terms of population, where the most of the population is actually an immigrant workforce, there's almost 100% consensus on this. And yet the United Arab Emirates puts laws on the books that anybody who complains about the government or even complains about normalization with the state of Israel will be put in prison. So they still have to put laws, despite all of this, to muzzle people, basically. But I wanted to ask you on one thing. First of all, Saad, you laid out clearly that these weapons, as with any kind of massacre that's happening around the world right now, weapons are being supplied by East and West by the United States. So everything goes back, as the new president of Ireland had says, everything goes back to the military-industrial complex. But you also mentioned that Israeli officials were actually directly, they are allies with Israel, but how were they directly involved in this counter-revolution and this massacre?
So leading up to the RSF siege in 2023, Hemeti met with Israeli intelligence officials, high up Israeli intelligence officials, days before the siege began. And it was found through investigative journalism that much of the surveillance technology that the RSF was using and is using now was came directly from Israel. So the surveillance technology is confirmed to have come from Israel, and of course it has. Israel exports mass surveillance all throughout the world. We really emphasize that. I think one thing that is very clear in the U.S. is that the same arms manufacturers that are sending the arms to, or that are the main providers of the manufacturing of arms to the UAE, are the same arms manufacturers to Israel. So that's something that your listeners should understand very clearly, that our fates are tied, whether we like it or not. These arms come from the same place, and we must demand an immediate end to this. We must, as U.S. taxpayers, demand that our dollars are not going to go towards these human rights violations. Our existing sanctions laws must be enforced against this genocidal war criminal, and he cannot be provided diplomatic legitimacy by being invited in to the U.S.
It's incredible what level of degradation the humanitarian world order has arrived at, where massacres like this are happening openly, and there's no nothing to hold back this kind of brutality. In terms of your organization, Saad, do you have like an office in Washington D.C. or you are based elsewhere?
Yeah, I want to just quickly emphasize to your listeners the scale of the atrocities that have occurred in the past 48 hours, in the past 72 hours, is unimaginable. The minimum amount of numbers of people who have been killed has come out, and that is at least 2,000 people in 48 hours. They have massacred an entire hospital yesterday. All of the patients, they took the six doctors hostage and are demanding ransom money for the doctors. They are, and of course the RSF is, the fighters are filming their atrocities. These videos are coming out of them being proud of lynching men, women, and children. Entire families are hanging from trees, are being lynched on cars, on trees. The atrocities in fashion that the RSF militia is conducting are barbaric and should never happen in any civilized society. And the U.S., it should not be enabling this through diplomatic legitimacy. The U.S.'s role has been extremely insidious throughout Sudan's genocide. It has played a public mediator role while privately instigating, while continuing to greenlight the UAE's genocide through its proxy militia, the RSF, by extending arms, increasing the arms supply. It is providing diplomatic legitimacy and greenlighting to the RSF. They can continue to operate with impunity and continue to destabilize Sudan. And we must demand an end. We must demand an end to the arms flow to the UAE. And you can do so by visiting our website, decolonizesudan.org. We have links to all of these resources. We have political education if you want an in-depth analysis or even a brief analysis on the political context of what got us here. I urge you to visit our website, decolonizesudan.org, and sign the CARE petition now for a UAE arms embargo. If you're in D.C., come out and support Sudanese people outside of the Waldorf Astoria to ensure that this war criminal cannot continue to be housed and invited in to our country. And Decolonize Sudan is, thank you so much for the support. Decolonize Sudan is currently headquartered in Dallas, Texas, but we have organizers in D.C. and throughout the nation.
Thank you, Saad. And I know you have to hop in on a plane in about 4 minutes or so. A last question. Can you explain to the audience what is it that UAE wants to steal from Sudan that is worth for them to do this bloodshed that they're committing?
So plain and simple, gold. The United Arab Emirates' main export is gold, although it doesn't have a single gold mine. And so the majority of its gold comes from Sudan, and it is smuggled from Sudan. And also importantly is the UAE seeks to control Sudan's land for agriculture, especially the west of Sudan, which is the most fertile land. Sudan has historically been known in the Arab world as the breadbasket, and that is because of the fertility of our land, and especially within the west of Sudan. And so there is a very clear goal of extraction of resources and of control of land. And so we must be very clear about the intentions of the United Arab Emirates here, and it is profit. Plain and simple, their gold is drenched in our blood.
Thank you so much for this passionate piece of information that you've given us today, Saad. Safe travels, and I hope to have you on again soon, because we have to keep our eyes on Sudan. As much as there's horror around the world, the fact
the platform
go ahead
and Sarah. not only must we keep our eyes on Sudan, but we must organize for Sudan, we must speak for Sudan, we must act for Sudan, and we must demand a UAE arms embargo now.
Thank you, Saad, for sure, and I'll keep pushing this message on every show that we do about the arms embargo and how necessary it is, because it's not only about this horror that's happening now in Sudan, but it's the UAE is shedding blood all over the region. Thank you, Saad, and safe travels.
Thank you, Zain.
And that was Saad from and she's with the Decolonized Sudan. And I urge people to go to the website, as Saad mentioned, to go to the website, which is decolonizedsudan.org, and check out what's happening. And if you're anywhere within a short ride or a walk from the Waldorf Astoria Hotel, please go join Sudanese activists that are demonstrating right now as one of the biggest blood-soaked representatives of this genocide is sitting pretty in a luxury hotel room right here in the heart of the belly of the beast, basically, and how fitting it is. And with that, I wanted to go to our regular program and have listened to a poem that I've been playing regularly as to set our intentions for the rest of the program. And that's Hanin's poem.
I don't know how much more a body can hold before it forgets it was meant for living, and I think of that when someone says hope is naive. And I have questions, not the kind you answer, though, the kind that ruins small talk, kind you fold up, put in your pocket, and hope no one asks for. Like, how does a child learn his name if everyone who spoke it is gone? And how does a father choose which son to bury when the ground cannot take them all? And what happens to a yell that never makes it past the ceiling? And if hope is naive, then tell me what else is left for the ones who keep breathing? My love, the heart is the last unoccupied country. Every revolution begins there. I asked a girl, what do you dream of? And she says, a chair that waits for me, even when I'm late. And if heaven is real, then to meet my friend at the gate. And I remember the stories we carry. A mother teaching her child a lullaby she knows will outlive her. And a boy who carries pieces of his sibling in a bag, saying, he is not heavy, he is my brother. So when they ask where heaven was, I'll say in the march of the people. Because far from here, a shore is burning. And far from here, men dig with their wedding rings. And far from here, the hospital is torn. And time is measured in how long blood stays warm. But you want numbers, though, huh? So did you know that the human body holds about 5 liters of blood, and it takes only one to keep a child alive? And did you know bones break more easily after too many nights without sleep? And did you know that the tongue heals faster than skin, so even the body knows that we have to speak? And did you know that the heart beats 100,000 times a day without once asking for permission? I don't know how much more a body can hold before it forgets it was meant for living, and I think of that when someone says hope is naive. My love, we don't need bridges, gardens, or cities. We need hope, and hope that feels hungry, so when the bridge is taken, remember the heart is the last unoccupied country.
As another thing that I've been listening to recently, I actually attended a meeting at Bowl Bookstore. People should check it out. It's the only independent worker-owned bookstore, and it's about to expand a little bit to a different location. They're located on North Capitol Street. But it was discussing the Star Wars trilogy film, which is Andor. It's the only one, actually, among all the Star Wars films, I think. It's the most that relates to our moment, our historic moment right now, where across the world there is what Saad just described. Murders that are happening east and west, massacres that are, and the murderers are getting away scot-free, and the source of all evil is the United States of American government, not the people, but the American government. The people are of a different, we've seen the polls, and we've seen the opinion where the people are going and where the government is going in the opposite direction. But this is at the end of Andor, there was a character named Nemec who had died as a martyr in the resistance to the empire. And think of it as a resistance to the U.S. empire. And think of the moment we have domestically right now with this fascist Trump and his administration. And think about how some people are feeling hopelessness. But some people are fighting, and we're seeing not only people fighting back, especially with the attacks on urban centers, but fighting back with joy and creativity. And this is what Nimick's manifesto, which was read at the end of Andor, relays. So let's listen to what he stated.
There'll be times when the struggle seems impossible. I know this already. Alone, unsure, dwarfed by the scale of the enemy. Remember this. Freedom is a pure idea. It occurs spontaneously and without instruction. Random acts of insurrection are occurring constantly throughout the galaxy. There are whole armies, battalions, that have no idea that they've already enlisted in the cause. Remember that the frontier of the rebellion is everywhere, and even the smallest act of insurrection pushes our lines forward. this. The imperial need for control is so desperate because it's so unnatural. Tyranny requires constant effort. It breaks. It leaks. Authority is brittle. Oppression is the mask of fear. Remember that. And know this. The day will come when all these skirmishes and battles, these moments of defiance, will have flooded the banks of the Empire's authority, and then there will be one too many. One single thing will break the siege. Remember this. Try.
And that was Nimick's manifesto, and it speaks to our moment right now. It speaks to what things that are people that are beginning to fight back after they had betrayed us. People like AOC, who said exactly what Nimick says in his manifesto, which is that oppression is the mask of fear. The way AOC had put it, and this is no endorsement for AOC because I was a supporter and she betrayed me during the genocide by not being openly against it. But now she's redeeming herself with these speeches. But you know, Nimick, that's what Nimick means by that oppression is the mask of fear. These people are afraid. The empire is falling. And people thought that when the empire starts falling, and this is the U.S. empire, like the Roman empire, like any, the Ottoman empire, all of those fell. But when they fall, they tear down civility. They tear down humanity. They tear down people with them. They take people down with us. But make no mistake, the empire is breaking apart. And that's why we have what we might call wall-to-wall right now news on crimes committed by the United States, whether it is in Ukraine, whether it is in Palestine, whether it is in Yemen, whether it is the wars they're about to start in South America, against Venezuela, against Colombia, against Cuba. They want to, and this is the person that's going around the world and going to the president of Taiwan, and where the president of Taiwan, one of the biggest brown nosers when it comes to Trump, says that yet again, like the president of Japan, you know, says that they want to nominate him for the Peace Prize, a man who's shredding the globe. They wants, you know, not only through war, but through climate change, through accelerating the degradation of Earth. So with that, I wanted to go to another short bit, and this one by Caitlin Johnson, who's been my favorite commentator, and she's talking about she gives you a little snapshot in a few minutes about what do we mean by that there's wall-to-wall news on crime committed by the U.S. Let's listen.
It's just wall-to-wall news stories about the U.S. and its allies abusing the world. It's just news story after news story about the U.S. and its allies terrorizing the world today. The Rapid Support Forces, RSF, have been filming themselves committing horrific massacres in Sudan over the last couple of days, reportedly murdering some 2,000 civilians. You can see the bloodstains on the ground in satellite images. As we discussed the other day, the RSF and its atrocities are backed by the UAE, a close partner of the United States. Meanwhile, Israel has committed another wave of massacres of its own throughout the Gaza Strip, reportedly killing 104 people in a single day, including 46 children. This is as many Palestinians as would typically be killed on any given day in Gaza prior to the so-called ceasefire. CBS News' 60 Minutes has released a cartoonishly blatant war propaganda piece on quote-unquote Nicolas Maduro, Venezuela's dictator, about how poor and unhappy the people of Venezuela are under their current government. The piece featured an interview with Republican Senator Rick Scott, who said that, "If I was Maduro, I'd head to Russia or China right now. His days are numbered." The U.S. can make threats, impose sanctions, and amass war machinery, but you don't truly know they're serious about attacking a country until they start churning out Pentagon propaganda in the mainstream press. In the same interview, Scott also said that if Maduro is successfully ousted, it'll be the end of Cuba. "America is going to take care of the Southern Hemisphere and make sure there's freedom and democracy," he added. The senator's statements suggest that the U.S. is preparing a push in Latin America similar to what it has been executing with Israel in the Middle East, eliminating any powers which refuse to bend the knee. South of the U.S. border, the top two disobedient governments are the socialist states of Venezuela and Cuba. In the Middle East, the U.S. and Israel have spent the last 2 years bombing Iran and Yemen, securing a regime change in Syria, and doing everything they can to eliminate Hamas and Hezbollah in order to rule the region uncontested. And of course, we've still got the horrifying U.S. proxy war in Ukraine, where soldiers continue to be dragged off against their will to fight in a nightmarish conflict that most Ukrainians now oppose, but which Zelensky is saying he intends to keep fighting for years against the will of the public. This whole miserable ordeal could have been avoided with a little diplomacy and a few low-cost concessions, but the Western Power Alliance avoided off-ramp after off-ramp in order to ensure that Russia would get sucked into another costly military quagmire. All over the world, the U.S. and its allies are murdering and abusing people in order to dominate the planet and ensure the survival of a capitalist system with which its power is intertwined. It is a giant murder machine feeding on human blood and the life force of our biosphere while providing nothing but obstacles to a healthy world. The U.S. centralized empire is a disease that affects our entire species. We had better find a cure, and fast.
And that was Tim Foley reading Caitlin Johnson's dispatch on what's happening around the world, and you could see the fight back in New York. People are not, in terms of fascism, in terms of this disease called the United States of America, the empire, the disease that's called Rubio, the disease that's called Trump, the disease that's called Biden, who started the whole massacre, who's the ultimate butcher of Gaza, make no mistake, and who Kamala Harris had participated with and is pretending that she was never for the, that she never said that she was going to make the United States military more lethal. Of course, that's in the historic record. So don't give me anything about the Democratic Party being an answer, unless you are talking about our favorite right now, who is Zohran, a Democratic Socialist. What we have right now is literally, you know, what throughout history, whether it was the Spanish Revolution or other revolutions, the uprisings of 68, we literally have fascism, or rather barbarism, more accurately barbarism, versus socialism. Pure and simple. What Zohran is proposing are socialist solutions to make New York more affordable. And he's been subjected, by the way, you know, if you're paying attention, you will see that the kind of Islamophobia that he's been subjected to is a last minute ditch to try to slander him by associating him with 9/11. You know, bringing up the most Islamophobic things, like that are, as one said, you have to actually take out your Orientalist bingo card in order to check off every Orientalist trope that they're trying to run right now in desperation. And yet, you know, he's having right now tens of thousands of volunteers out in the street, because the polling has begun, the voting has begun, the early voting has begun, and it won't end until November 3rd. and New Yorkers are right now. All the billionaires, whether it's the billionaires of Estee Lauder, whether it's the billionaires of Walmart, that are living in, whether they're living in the Hamptons or New York, they are funding. There's, at least 30 billionaires that are funding Cuomo because they're afraid. They're actually, as Zohran himself pointed out, they're actually spending more money funding Cuomo's campaign and funding PR machinery to try to assassinate the character of Zohran than what Zohran would have is planning to tax them, which is an increase in tax on these oligarchs and billionaires by 2%, by the way. He's proposing to pay for all of these things, the childcare, the subsidiaries to childcare, the subsidiaries to transportation, to the buses, the subsidiaries to the grocery stores that he wants to open up that will be government run, at least 5 grocery stores. Wow, what a scary thing to have a public grocery stores, according to these billionaires. These are things, inshallah, he will win. And if he wins, he'll be the first, of course, Muslim mayor. He will, little brown boys and girls, as somebody said, who have been, in the shadows, living in the shadows, can now come out into the light and be proud of this. He is showing the way forward to the Democratic Party and to the nation. And cowards like Hakim, he's exposed not by directly confronting them, but by merely existing and presenting level-headed reform that actually speaks to the people rather than corporate interests. He's exposed people like Hakim Jeffries, that they're doing nothing but serving corporations. They're Israel First, or Cory Booker, who spends 25 hours on the podium and Democrats are cheering and hasn't done diddly, hasn't suggested a cert one tiny thing. And he's exposed these by merely showing the way forward. How do you go forward in every urban center? And that's why, suddenly this campaign against the oligarchs that Bernie and AOC was leading, that was great rhetoric but didn't have the substance, now it has an engine, and that engine is called Zohran. And the way Zohran has dealt with this Islamophobia has been brilliant. And the reason why these oligarchs are desperate, it's because it means the end, the beginning of the end of this oligarchy in terms of what they've put forward in a bipartisan way. Meaning, this is what George W. Bush put forward, both dad and son. And this is what especially even more Bill Clinton is responsible. Clutch your pearls, Democrats. Yes, Bill Clinton actually fulfilled Ronald Reagan's wildest dreams. And I say this when I say that Newt Gingrich, the Republican strategist and the one that led the Republican Revolution back in the 90s, he said that Ronald Reagan, he actually gave Clinton the credit of fulfilling those dreams. And he said, Ronald Reagan prepared us ideologically for the dismantling of the welfare state, and Bill Clinton actually delivered that. Yes, Bill Clinton is the one that passed the crime bill, the immigration bill that Trump is building on right now. He passed he increased the death penalty. He widened the death penalty. He shifted the whole political spectrum, where what was called the left, what was really the left, he shifted that all the way so that what is considered left now is actually center, and what's considered right is actually extreme right. It is actually fascism, and so they built on each other. And yes, continue to clutch your pearls as I tell you that George Bush Jr. Continued this and followed by Obama. And you could tell the how much they were in love together when you look at Michelle Obama hugging George Bush Jr. at sports events. Somebody who is the reason why the Gulf War started, and the reason, and who is responsible for millions of deaths since then, and not only and thousands, tens of thousands of deaths of American soldiers for oil. Yeah, this is what you have as a progressive president. And Obama, who widened the when you want to talk about extrajudicial killings, it's what Trump is building on now is what Obama expanded widely. He says, you know, when we voted for him in 2008, he says, you know, we voted against the war. We thought he's going to present something else. And when he comes into power, what does he say? He said, no, I was never against war. I was against a stupid war. I want to wage a smart war. You know what a smart war is? It's extrajudicial killings. That's why he started droning the hell out of Yemen without needing any permission. And so this extrajudicial interference in our own politics, this is blowback right now from those days and from that expansion. So that's where we are right now. And what Zohran means, Zohran victory, I want to end with this, and is that what the Zohran victory means is the end of the oligarchy. And I mean the end of these ideology that all these presidents and the end of these Upper West Side billionaires have been pushing on New York and on the whole of the nation. And it's a hope, and it's a hope that's going to start a that's going to cause the subterranean fire that's been brewing here, this class war that's brewing right now in the United States, to surface. So thank you for listening to my rant, and now we'll have a little bit of music that I've played before. Which is the Al-Sara and the Nubatones. Since we're all about Sudan today, Al-Sara and Nubatones, for those of you who don't know, is an amazing Sudanese band. And we will we'll play the song Ya Watan, which means O Nation.
وحيدة ما يدرى بها الزمن الشجر جف لما تهلك الجزع تشقق وتكسر وين يا وطن وين يا زمن ابان من سنين تتمطى وتفلك في جبينك بالألم وين يا وطن.
The soul of West Africa lands at Brentwood Arts Exchange's Listening Room on Friday, November 7th at 8 p.m. with Chek Amala Jabate, a master of the Ngori, the traditional West African lute. Jabate weaves stories through rhythm and song, blending ancient sounds with a modern spirit that moves both heart and feet. Details at pgparks.com. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Good news, family. You can now take WPFW everywhere you go with our brand new WPFW radio app. Stream Jazz and Justice live, listen to archived shows, view the program schedule and playlists, donate, and more, all right from your phone. Download the WPFW radio app today from Apple App or Google Play Stores. WPFW in your pocket. Jazz and Justin.
The Capital Area Food Bank is offering free food distribution for federal workers starting now until the government reopens. Federal employees and contractors will need to show a government work ID to receive food. Distribution times and sites are as follows. Tuesdays, 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. at No Limits Outreach Ministries, 7721 Barlow Road, Hyattsville, Maryland. Wednesdays, 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. at So What Else, 6116 Executive Boulevard, North Bethesda, Maryland. Fridays,
support for WPFW comes in part from Friends of the Congo, a 501c3 entity that will be hosting Love Sound, an evening of soul sisters in support of WPFW and Friends of the Congo's DRC Women, Peace, and Security Center in Kinshasa. This event will be Sunday, November 2nd from 5 to 8 p.m. at Westminster Presbyterian Church, 400 I Street, Southwest. Performers include Navasha Dea, Liani Mataka, Janelle Gill, Sweet Honey in the Rock, and more. More information on this event is available at WPFWFM.org.
For WPFW News in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin. Here are some headlines. Damage assessment, which could take months, began today in Jamaica after Hurricane Melissa struck the island with wind speeds of 185 miles per hour. More than 51,000 people were without electricity as of this morning. Bridges were flooded and several roads impassable, making it harder to reach the most hard-hit areas. Prime Minister Andrew Holness declared the country a disaster area, with St. Elizabeth Parish reported to be underwater. Only one fatality has been reported so far, although that number is likely to change as rescue crews make their way through the devastation. Melissa is now a Category 2 storm as it heads toward the Bahamas after making landfall in Cuba overnight as a Category 3 storm and causing severe flooding. In more news, the Department of Defense announced that further boat strikes against alleged drug cartels occurred on Monday, targeting four boats. That's the most targeted in one day. WPFW's Noah Portner has this report.
14 people died on Monday's strikes, also the most in a single day since the Trump administration launched its violent campaign to suppress drug smuggling. There was one sole survivor from the strikes, but whether he was left behind on the open ocean is unclear. The Mexican Navy says it picked up one survivor in international waters on Tuesday. These strikes have drawn the anger of several regional powers. The presidents of Mexico and Colombia denounced the aggressive use of force in international waters, while the administration defends itself by claiming lives are saved for every boat destroyed. The administration's actions have also annoyed several Republican senators. Conservative Rand Paul called the strikes, quote, extrajudicial killings, end quote. And like the Mexican president, he complained that the administration has not even pretended to keep him in the loop. The DEA reports that the majority of cocaine entering the U.S. first travels across the Pacific Ocean, not the Caribbean Sea. From WPFW and WBAI, I'm Noah Portner.
And in more news, Israeli airstrikes killed 104 people in Gaza overnight, including 46 children, according to local health officials. The strikes mainly hit residential buildings, shelter tents, and schools. Both Israel and Gaza accuse each other of violating the ceasefire that has been in place for less than 3 weeks. Israel accuses Hamas of firing on its forces in Rafah and of failing to return all of the remains of hostages held in Gaza. Hamas said it had no connection to the shooting in Rafah and that Israel is intentionally obstructing efforts to search for bodies in the Strip. also that Israel is, quote, seeking to fabricate the false pretext in preparation for taking new aggressive steps against our people, close quote. The United Nations Human Rights Chief said today that he is appalled at reports of the attacks and that, quote, the laws of war are very clear on the paramount importance of protecting civilians and civilian infrastructure, close quote. In related news, the New York Times reports today that hundreds of trucks transporting aid are now entering Gaza daily, some with aid from international organizations.